Hello, everybody. How you doing? Who has the day off tomorrow? Yeah. I want to invite you to turn in the Bible to Genesis chapter 2. We'll start there. And there will be fine people in the aisles who'd love to put a Bible in your hands. We'll be looking at a series of passages. And then if you have a blank sheet of white paper and a pencil, that would help greatly. We tried to get you one on the way in. And we are happy to provide miniature golf pencils or any sort of weapon. So if you need paper or a Bible, just throw your hand up and we'll hand that stuff out. And we'll get rolling. If you have your paper, let's take a moment. Actually, let's take a while. And let's do a communal journaling, diary, venting exercise. So first off, on your sheet of paper with your writing utensil, what are you angry about? And if you need extra paper, what are you angry about? What are you frustrated about? What are you worried about? What's causing you anxiety? If you're not used to being honest with what's really going on inside of you, and you are terrified that somebody next to you might think that you aren't perfect. And if people still think you're perfect next to you, we have even deeper issues. Nevertheless, if you're like, I don't want anybody looking at my paper, then just write, I have a friend who's. I have a friend who's. Give me compassion for my friend who. What has you so hacked off right now? What's boiling right below the surface? Put you in an awkward position, because if someone says, how was the service? And you say, well, it wasn't that good, it's because you didn't participate. If it's just a string of expletives, it's okay. Some of you are like, how do you know? Well, it's because you should see my paper. What is it that if it was taken away right now, you would breathe the biggest sigh of relief? Is it a problem? A trouble? Something weird in a relationship that matters to you? Just write it out. Just get it out on that sheet of paper. Then we're going to have a microphone right here, and you come up and read your sheet. And if you can't think of anything, we would like you to give the message, because we can learn from you. angry, frustrated, stressed, worried, concerned, anxious, mad, totally hacked off. I've had it up to here with. Then, verse 7, Genesis 2. The Lord God formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. The Bible begins with two different explanations or ways to help people understand how we got here. Genesis 1 is this poem. It's got this rhythm and this cadence. It's got a beat. It's got a hook. It's got a chorus. And it was good. It was good. It's this very rhythmic, beautiful poem. Very much in the style of the poetry of that day. Genesis 2 gives like a different perspective on the same creating of everything. It's much more of like a narrative. It's a story. It's the kind of thing you'd tell around a campfire at night. And in Genesis 2, the explanation is that God took dirt, ground, dry ground. The word is adama in the Hebrew. And God breathed into it. And between the ground and the breath of life that God breathes into it, out came a man. So when you call somebody a dirtbag, it's a... It's a theologically terribly accurate term. The person who first told this story was reflective of how the ancients understood this paradox that's at the core of what it means to be human. They understood that there was something dirt-ish about us, something of the soil, because the first man's name is Adam. Adam. So it's God took the Adama and made an Adam, which has a way of keeping your ego in check. When your name is essentially like dirt, it built in to the explanation of how we got here are these two components. So I want to trace this paradox that lies at the heart of Adam, Eve, and you and me, because their story is our story. Turn with me to Psalm 39. As you work through ancient writings, and specifically the Bible, you keep coming back to this paradox that exists at the heart, that is central to what it means to be a human being. There is the dirt, Adama, dimension to our existence. Job talks about we come from dust. Ecclesiastes, we come from dust. The Psalms, God remembers that we're from dust. From dust we came, and to dust we return. It comes up again and again. Ground, dust, brevity, fragile. Like in Psalm 39, verse 5, you have made my days a mere hand breadth, which is the width of a hand. I'm just here for a minute. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Everyone is but a breath, even those who seem secure. The writer says, take the person who seems like they most are secure, and it's just dust, dirt that's been breathed into. Turn over to Psalm 8, a couple chapters to the left. There is this fragile nature to being a human. This week, my cell phone would not dial out. So it gave that system busy, please try again. Then it dialed again, system busy, please try again. On the third system busy, please try again, when it flashes up on my screen, I took my phone and I had this moment of... You ever have that moment where you are frozen and you realize what you were about to do, and then you begin having this conversation with yourself about what was the goal and objective of that particular gesture? And I realized that what had instinctively happened is my phone was about to be thrown out the window of my car. And I had this conversation with myself, like, well, then that would have helped it dial better. This sense, I'm fragile. I cave so fast. I talk so well until I'm in a slightly stressful situation. And then how many of you have this sense on a regular basis when you're reminded of the dirt clod dimensions to your existence? Okay, good. I was going to say, apparently denial comes with that as well. There's a sense. We all live with it. If you ever walk down the halls of a hospital, ever been to a funeral, ever driven by a car accident, we're reminded all the time. You watch the news and you see where the latest fighting goes on in the world. Shootings in Grand Rapids the past couple of weeks. There is this fragile dimension to our existence. The ancient writers, the writer of Genesis, the writer of the Psalms, who said we come from dust. And yet, in this fragile dust has been breathed in the very breath of God. Notice how the writer in Psalm 8 deals with this tension. Verse 3, when I consider your heavens, Psalm 8, 3, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place. What are mere mortals that you're mindful of them, or human beings that you care for them? The writer says, "How you like put the stars in place, and yet, God, you care about like clods like us. How can you be that big and vast and mighty and transcendent, and yet that close, near, intimate, imminent?" Then it says, verse 5, "You have made them," it's referring to humans, "a little lower than the heavenly beings," a reference to angels, "and crowned them with glory and honor." Now, the glory and honor there are not referring to God, referring to humans. "You've made them rulers over the works of your hands, and you've put everything under their feet." He says there is this tension to being a human because we come from dirt and we're so fragile and frail. And we crumble so easily, and yet we've been breathed into by the same being that made the universe. There is a greatness, there is a life source, there is a power and strength and vitality that rests inside of every single one of these divine dirt clods. And the writer says, and we are so fragile, and yet we've been breathed into by the same being that made the universe. There is a greatness. The writer here uses the word glory and honor that resides in every single human being. Fragile and yet filled with the potential for glory and honor. I love how Nelson Mandela puts it in one of his writings. He says, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us." And then he concludes by saying, "Your playing small doesn't serve the world." We were born to manifest the glory, put on display, to show the glory of God that is within us. He says, "You may be a dirt clod, but there is greatness and power and glory that resides in every single human being." And the scriptures live with this tension of how fragile we are, and yet we have been breathed into. That's what created us, is this profound, powerful life source that brought everything into existence, breathed into each of us just to give us the breath to move around. Now, the word breathing has a fascinating double meaning throughout the scriptures. Turn with me to Psalm 104. The ancients who told the story and who probed how we're made and how we're wired. Psalm 104, just a couple chapters to the right. There is a word that over time, one word came to be used to mean two different things. And then that's in the Hebrew scriptures, there's a Hebrew word. But then in the Greek, which is the New Testament, a different word, but having the same two meanings came about. And I want to show you one sentence, one section, where the same word is used, but in two different ways in the English. Verse 29, Psalm 104, is speaking of God. "God, when you hide your face, they're terrified. When you take away their breath, they die and return to the dust." A reference to Genesis 2:7. If we're dust that's been breathed into, then God, when you take away the breath, all we are is dust. Verse 30, "When you send your," and what's the next word in your text? "Spirit, they are created." Now, we miss some of this because we read it in the English. But in the Hebrew language, The word breath and the word spirit are the same words. In the Hebrew language, it's the word ruah. Let me hear you say ruah. And then in the New Testament, it's the Greek word pneuma. Let me hear you say pneuma. Some of you might be saying pneuma, but it's all the same. Same word. Ruah and pneuma. So you take away their ruah, their breath, and all they are is dust. And when you send your ruah, they are created. It means breath or wind. Take one hand, place it upon your belly. Take one hand, place it upon your chest. Let's breathe for a moment, shall we? Nice, big, deep breaths. Let's get this temperature up a few degrees in the next couple minutes. A fully relaxed person, free from narcotics, will generally take, in a fully relaxed state, 4 to 6 breaths a minute. Most statistics show that most people breathe somewhere around 16 to 20 times a minute throughout the course of an average day. Now, to breathe properly, perfect, healthy breathing would come from our belly. That's where the breath would come in and come out. How many of you, when you began breathing, discovered that you were breathing mostly from your chest? Many, 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 many of us actually breathe from our chest. We breathe 16 to 20 times a minute from our chest. And God created us in a relaxed state to breathe somewhere below 10 times a minute from deep in our belly. Feel free to breathe as deep as you can without snoring. Central to the Christian tradition for thousands of years have been disciplines of meditation, reflection, silence, and breathing. It was understood that to be a healthy person, to be fully connected with God and fully centered, you would spend significant parts of your day in silence, breathing, meditating, praying, allowing the Spirit of God to transform you and touch you. And the word ruah means breath, but it also means spirit. Now, from way back when, our ancestors understood that there's something divine about our breath. There's something sacred and holy about the very act of breathing. Namely, when you're born, if you don't start breathing fast, you're in trouble. And when you take your last breath, you die. So in a very physiological, physical sense, we need our breath. But they understood that in the same way, we need God. We need our connection with God to have any sort of life at all. And so in the same way that our breath, keep breathing, by the way, not that you would stop breathing. Maybe I should say keep breathing deeply. In the same way, the ancients come to understood that God would actually dwell inside of people. So one of the reasons why they used ruah and pneuma the way they did is they believe that the God who made everything actually lived and dwelled inside of people. Later writers began to refer to people who were aware of this as temples, and their gathering would be the temple of God, meaning God lives and dwells in and in the midst of his people. One writer puts it like this: and if the spirit, the breath of him who raised Jesus from the dead, is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of the spirit who lives in you. Take out your sheet of paper that you vomited on about 10 minutes ago. All the things that you spewed onto that paper. Take a moment as you breathe deeply, to invite the God who made the universe into your breath and into your sheet. God, if you can raise somebody from the dead and you can set the stars in place with your fingers, could you help me out on item C on my paper? Take a moment and go through your sheet. Invite the Spirit to breathe into you and onto those things that you've written down. I wonder sometimes when we feel as though God is far, God is thinking, I gave you breathing, I can't get closer. Because from the very beginning, breath, the breath that every single one of us is taking all the time, was a physical reminder of God. Same word, spirit, breath. Is God as close as breathing? Is there a bit of a problem when somebody says, I don't need God to live? Is God as close as breath? Notice this from how much we breathe. We generally inhale. Those of you who are like, I didn't inhale. Yeah, you do. Each day, we inhale about 14,000 liters of air, which is around 26,000 breaths, which is around 150 bathtubs full, if that gives you an idea how much. Next slide. The Spirit itself testifies with our spirit. Notice how sometimes what they'll do is they'll capitalize the one word, pneuma, and then make the other pneuma small s. The Spirit, capital pneuma, testifies with our small s, pneuma, that we are God's children. One of the things the Spirit does, one of the things the breath does, is remind you that you belong to God and that you can't earn it and you can't get enough points to get in with the big guy. And you can't do enough good deeds and then God will like you. One of the things the Spirit does is remind us that we belong, period. Just exactly as we are. You are loved by God. God, in some senses, couldn't care less how much money you make and how perfect your kids are and how good your grades are and how fast your company is growing. And how thin, pretty, wonderful. God loves you exactly as you are. Would our lives be better if on a regular basis we stopped what we were doing and breathed to remind ourselves that we're loved exactly as we are? Like if you're in a conversation and you find yourself about to like throw out a bunch of accomplishments so that everybody will be impressed with you, maybe just step back and say, I'm sorry, I need to breathe for a moment. How many relationships would be a bit less rocky if as the fighting escalated, people were attuned enough to think, you know what, I got to step back and breathe for a minute. Okay, now I'm back. In yoga, one of the central tenets of yoga is your breath needs to remain the same, regardless of the pose. So whether you're making the letter Q with your whatever, or you're just starting. In yoga, one of the things you learn right away is no matter how difficult the pose is, especially if you happen to have somebody from the Grand Rapids Ballet on the mat next to you, who can see their own back this way, it's not how flexible you are. It's not whether you can do the poses. It's not how much you can bend yourself. It's can you keep your breath consistent through whatever you're doing. And the yoga masters say this is how it is when you follow Jesus and surrender to God. It's your breath being consistent. It's your connection with God, regardless of the pose you find yourself in. That's integrating the divine into the daily. It's so that whatever you're going through, you never lose consistent, deep breathing. Now, if you do just some basic research on the physiology of breathing, it's stunning what is going on when we inhale and exhale. Next slide. 99% of our energy should come from breathing, the experts say. Most of us access 10 to 20% of it. Like, think of how many of us need a caffeine hit to get up, and maybe we ought to just breathe more. Generally agreed that most of us are only tapping 10 to 20% of what's available just through breathing. Next, scriptures say that God gives the Spirit without limit. If you take the word ruah, and you take the word pneuma, and you trace them through the scriptures, they come up again and again and again. You need guidance, God says, give it to you. You need wisdom, give it to you. You need courage, give it to you. You need strength, I'll give it to you. God gets really, really matter-of-fact and bold when it comes to these promises God keeps making. You need perseverance? I'll give it to you. You need truth? I'll give it to you. Guidance, direction, wisdom, truth, learning, knowledge, order out of chaos, clarity and confusion? I'll give it. For most of us, do we just need to spend more time breathing? God, I know you live within me. I invite you in. This one blew me away when I found it. Notice this stat from breathing. For many of us to stay healthy, we have to have the elimination of waste. 11% of our body waste is eliminated through the commode, toilet, John, Lou, whatever. 19% is eliminated through perspiration. All of the rest, 70% of our 70% of our waste is eliminated through breathing. So when I'm not breathing properly, when I'm breathing fast through my chest, and I'm going from this thing to this thing to this thing to this thing, and I'm stressed, and the whole day long we say, I didn't even stop to catch my breath. I've actually allowed my body to retain all sorts of toxins, which will ultimately kill me. And that's literal. It will just kill me. Next slide. It says that in the book of Thessalonians. It says that God's intention is that we would be saved through the sanctifying work of the pneuma. Now the word sanctifying, big word, means cleaning, purifying. It's the house cleaning that God's Spirit wants to do. What the Spirit does is the Spirit allows us to see the dirt, the sin, the brokenness. This is what the Spirit does. The Spirit makes us aware of things that need to go, of things that need to get past, things that need to be eliminated, things that we need to get rid of. Are you furious with somebody and you're plotting revenge? We need to breathe that out. Next slide. The questions this raises for me is, what do I need to breathe out? What are you worried about? Do you need to right now? Here, God, I'm going to breathe that out. What has you confused and totally turned around? God, I'm going to breathe that out. Is there hate, anger, lust, envy, greed? Are you coveting something? If I only had that thing that that person has, then I'd be okay. And you just need to exhale it. Are you carrying around problems that you shouldn't? Because somewhere you bought the lie that, as Anne Lamott says, you're the flight attendant to the world. And you need to say, that is their problem, not mine. Let's take a moment on your sheet of paper. Just ask yourself, is there anything you need to breathe out? God did not make you to carry that around, whatever it is. God did not make you to have to live with that. So we breathe it out. Central to the Christian tradition for thousands of years has been reflection, meditation, breathing, has been this awareness that if I don't stop on a regular basis and ask questions about the crap that I'm carrying around, and I don't get rid of it, my life will just end up a mess. When was the last time you took time to breathe? That you turned off your cell phone and put your computer on sleep and said, I am going to exhale. There's some things I need to breathe out. Which, if you breathe out enough, at some point you need to breathe in, or it's called choking. So there's a balance here. So next question, what do I need to breathe in? Maybe today you're just filled with despair. It's like, God, just give me a reason to get up tomorrow morning. You can be really, really simple with God. God, I really am thinking about killing my sister. Could you like breathe in just one shred that maybe she's not fully demonic? God's like, okay, I can do that. Just little baby steps. God, I've been cheating and lying and pretending. And I need you to breathe in who I really am. Courage. Maybe your heart has been broken. And it's just, God, would you heal me? God, we are fragile, frail clods of dirt. And we need you to breathe into us hope and truth and love and courage. Perhaps for many of us, the world has become an ugly place, and we need you to breathe in some beauty. We ask you to be with us in our breathing. Help us breathe out so that we can breathe in. If breathing has dragged up some stuff that needs to be exhaled, there are people around the stage who would love to talk with you after the service, to join you. If you just need a good, I was going to say a good cry, but a good breathe, we're around. And we would love to help in any way that we could. In a minute, I'm going to tell you that there's an offering. But when I do that, how about instead of hooting and hollering, we just take one deep breath together. So if you're giving an offering, there are joy boxes at the back. Last week we had Change the World Sunday and we talked about the different things we're involved in around the world. And straight through those doors on the right is a room where the global outreach pastors and leaders will be there and would love to talk with you, answer any questions. Maybe you read through the love book and want to know more. We'd love to meet you and invite you into the journey that we're on. And now, my brothers and sisters, may you breathe. May you breathe deeply. May it change your life. Peace be with you. See you next week.